Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
By definition, a storyteller conveys events in words, images, and sounds, often by improvisation or embellishment. The Living Bread Radio Network presents The Storytellers with Tony Agnese. Today, you'll hear a faith-based, inspirational story that's both heartfelt and heartwarming. And now, let's meet today's storyteller with Tony Agnese.
Welcome to The Storytellers. This is Tony Agnese. It's great to have you by today. You know, in the books I write where I tell stories, oftentimes people come up to me and they tell me even more fascinating stories. And that's what this show is all about, to get people on who are storytellers, who can share a story that is going to be a blessing to the people who are listening. And my guest is no exception to that. Her name is Virginia Pillars, and her book is entitled Broken Brain, Fortified Faith, Lessons of Hope Through a Child's Mental Illness. Virginia, it's great to hear your voice again.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's great to hear yours, too.
You know, there is, even in 2018, there is this kind of a stigma attached to mental illness and mental health issues. You know, if somebody has diabetes or a high blood pressure or whatever, we don't think much of it. But somehow still in 2018, when we hear a mental illness, it conjures up improper thinking. And why is that? What's going on there?
There's an old thought process, you know, and it's going back from years ago that it was a character flaw or it was the fault of the parenting that happened in that person's life, and that's what caused mental illness. And it's also kind of scary for people because they don't understand it. But in reality, in 2018, they have discovered that it is actually biologically based, just like all the other illnesses. It has a biological component that's going on for these people that are affected, and it just happens to be the organ that is the brain that is their trouble. So if we can get people to understand that that person did not choose that life for themselves, any more so than the person who has diabetes would choose that life, or someone who has cancer. We don't choose those things. They just happen.
Do we find that mental health issues are generational in the same family? Has that been proven? Or is it just kind of, it is, okay.
It is, yes. There is research that there is definitely a genetic component that is going on. Some of the major illnesses, the debilitating ones such as schizophrenia, which I write about, bipolar, major depressive, you know, they can look at family genetics and they can see the patterns. And so you have a higher percentage, a chance of getting it if you are a child of, say, someone who has mental health issues themselves.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about your personal story. And you have a daughter who was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And take us back to the beginning of that, when you first got that diagnosis. Was she misdiagnosed for a period of time before you got there? Were there things that manifest when she was younger that you just couldn't identify or couldn't understand?
We didn't really. No, she was never misdiagnosed. Well, let me take that back. In the very, very beginning, initially, her very first doctor's appointment, the doctor didn't have the experience that was necessary to help her. he diagnosed her with a simple thing. He said, depression. And he said, 5 days off of work and you'll be fine. And gave her a very, very low dose of an antidepressant. Well, her issue was not depression. Her issue was her brain had already started that, what I call broken process, where the connections weren't proper in her brain anymore. So depression was not what she had. Did we see it before? We did not. We had things now when we look back with 2020 that maybe were foretelling signs. But again, we weren't educated. We didn't know what to look for. And when she was in what they call the prodromal stage, where signs were appearing, we couldn't have probably had her diagnosed at that point because it wasn't, there wasn't enough evidence, I guess you would have to say, to for the doctors to say, this is what's going on. Oftentimes what's going on in that prodromal state, you can attribute that to things such as, you know, a depressive episode. You know, you're going through something rough in life. You can attribute it to teenage behavior sometimes, young adult behavior sometimes. And so it's very difficult to diagnose it at that stage. It's rarely diagnosed then.
How old was she when she was first diagnosed?
24.
So she was out of school. She was already an adult woman when she was diagnosed.
Yes. She had a college degree, and she had gone through 4 years of undergrad degree and was out working when it manifested itself.
And you, as a parent, and I can certainly understand this as a parent and a grandparent. I always say I don't care how old your kids are, you're always a parent. You know, you still care, and you're always a parent. What was your first reaction with the diagnosis, and how did you cope with it? And were you bound and determined to help get her help, or was she on her own path? How did that all come together?
Well, initially, before the doctor gave her the diagnosis of schizophrenia, our son had done a lot of research on his own, and he had kind of been prepping us, priming the pump, so to speak, telling us that this is what he thought she had. And I highly respect my son and his opinion, her older brother. So I kind of had that in my head, but even still, hearing that from the doctor was a very devastating thing to hear. She was in denial, which often happens with schizophrenia. They don't believe they're sick. They don't believe that that's what they have. So she was in that position where we had to go through the court system to force her into taking medication. And she resisted that, as you might guess. But the court did back us, and it was a process for her to come to that understanding. I was determined to do everything I could possibly do to enable her to get to that point.
How did you reconcile, you know, involving the court with just the love of mom? Was it difficult? Did it anger you? Did it tear you apart, or cause you to not sleep?
And tore us apart. You feel like you're betraying your child to go before the court and say she isn't able to take care of herself. Now, what our family did, which was helpful to us, was it takes two people to stand before the court along with doctors. So they took that away from me, and it was the people who stood and basically testified against her were my husband and our oldest son, her eldest brother. That way it left me to be there for her during that hearing. And so I sat behind her, or sat so she could face me through the entire thing, and just gave her encouraging looks and let her know that we weren't against her and that we were going to be there for her.
That was probably very, very smart thinking on someone's part to do it to do it that way. Schizophrenia is often accompanied by some other things like paranoia or bipolar disorder. All of those kind of get wrapped into a bundle. Were there any other things that manifest at that time, or was it just strictly the schizophrenia?
It was pretty much, she had a lot of the classic symptoms of schizophrenia, which is the paranoia, the thinking that that someone was out to get her. She had disorganized thought process, meaning she couldn't put thoughts together in a rational manner and be able to verbalize that. So she had that going on. She had delusions where, things that she believed were true about things that were happening around that actually were not true. She had auditory hallucinations and visual hallucinations. Mm-hmm. So she had a lot of the classic, what they call, symptoms of schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit, Virginia Pillars is my guest. Her book, Broken Brain, Fortified Faith, is available everywhere online and at CatholicBook.net, who's one of our, CatholicBook.net is one of our sponsors, and it's available there as well. What are the treatments like for schizophrenia now? And is it a disease that is manageable? Can someone have a fairly normal life with the proper treatment?
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about that. Did it take a while to find the right meds or the right? I mean, do you have to experiment? Talk about that a little bit for those people who may be going through these things right now.
Well, it was very scary, as anyone who's gone through something like this or even can imagine going through it. It was terrifying for us to watch that process of the brain breaking and then bringing her back again. It was done through very intensive therapy sessions with a fantastic counselor that she worked one-on-one with. We had regular visits with a psychiatrist. She was court-ordered to take medication for quite a few years, and so the medication, the combination of the therapy, the doctor visits, the environment that we created for her, where it was stress-free for her, she was just able to actually heal. She had a best friend who came and took her out in social settings all the time, which was a component we couldn't give her that her best friend did. Mm-hmm. So she had socialization to help break out of that, like I say, a prison of the mind. And she was accepted and she was loved by people her own age. Mm-hmm. So all of those things played into her recovery.
One of the things we hear, Virginia, is sometimes when people get the right formula of meds and so forth, and they stabilize, that they feel better, and oftentimes might say, "I don't need the meds anymore." Did that ever happen, or do you see that in some of your talks with people?
Oh, it definitely happens all the time, and there is a scientific reason for that, Tony. It has a very long word, and it's called anosognosia. Mm-hmm. And the brain is actually responsible for telling them, you're better, you don't need medication. It happens in stroke victims, too, when the brain has been damaged. So, yes, it is a common thing. And unfortunately, many of us look at that when our loved one makes that choice and think they're just being obstinate and they're being ornery. But in reality, they really, really truly believe that. Mm-hmm. Did we have that? Yes, we did. Because we had gone through the court system, she was under court order to continue with her medication. We allowed her to go off her antipsychotic medication while she still lived in our home with her doctor's encouragement. Her doctor encouraged us to let her do it and said the only way she'll ever really understand is if you let her try. Mm-hmm. Very difficult as a mom to think perhaps we're going to go through all of this all over again.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder, you know, she reaches a point that says, okay, now I understand. This is something I have to do for the rest of my life. I have to take this pill or these pills for the rest of my life.
She did. because we allowed her to do that while she was in our own home, she did get there. And I can still remember the day where she came to me in my kitchen and said, "Mom, call my doctor. It's back." Mm-hmm. She said, "I need that medicine, Mom. It's back." And she had figured it out, that the things that were plaguing her mind, that this is what people were doing to her, she realized that people wouldn't do that to her. And from that day forward, and that was in 2007, she has not looked back and ever said, "I don't need the medicine." She says, "I need it."
My guest is Virginia Pillars. Virginia is the author of the book Broken Brain, Fortified Faith. When we come back, we're going to talk about fortified faith and how what role faith played in this story, in this journey that that Virginia has taken with her daughter. And we're going to talk about some of the work that Virginia is doing currently to turn her misery into a ministry when we return.
Support for the Storytellers is provided by CatholicBook.net, serving the Catholic community for 30 years with books, Bibles, gifts, and more. CatholicBook.net is safe, secure, and simple to use. Just a few clicks and your purchase is delivered right to your door. CatholicBook.net, for 30 years, a commitment to service.
This is Tony Agnese. Welcome back to The Storytellers. My guest today is Virginia Pillars, author of the book Broken Brain, Fortified Faith. Virginia, we spent some time talking about the diagnosis and what your daughter has gone through and the fact that she's stable and doing well. During that whole year, the years that you were involved with this, what role did your faith play, and did you ever question your faith? What give me a sense of the role that faith played in getting from getting you through to where you're at today?
I was angry, Tony, and I'm honest with people, and I tell them I was mad at God. I was indignant. I thought, how can you do this to us? We had spent our entire married life trying to raise our children in the faith, taking them to church, reading Bible stories, praying with them every night, all the things that we try to do to instill faith with our children. And our daughter, Amber, was a youth minister when schizophrenia manifested for her. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I'd been kicked in the stomach, so I was angry. Through an organization, I learned to quit hiding and keeping this pain that I was going through to myself. So I started to reach out and let people that were close to me know what was happening in our home.
Was that therapeutic?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was, because it allowed people to minister to us. Mm-hmm. and be there for us. That was what we needed. We just didn't know that that's what we needed, but we needed to be surrounded by people who loved us and hold us up on those days that we couldn't get out of bed ourselves, mm-hmm. Figuratively. I'd never had that option to stay in bed, but there were days when I felt like I couldn't get back out of bed and face the next day, and I needed people to support me prayerfully and be there with their presence, listen to me on the phone, come to my house when I needed to cry. And so by opening up, people came to me to do that. But my aunt heard about it and called and said, told me to read. And I was like, read? She said, yeah, read When Bad Things Happen to Good People by Harold Kushner. Mm-hmm. And I followed her advice, and I went and got that book and read it. And that helped me to turn my anger around to, what do I need to do now? God, I need you to walk through this with me and show me what to do next. How can I make this better? And that book was quite instrumental in turning my attitude around. And then I dug back into Bible reading and reading devotionals and prayer time every morning before anybody else got up to face mm-hmm. the day.
So the anger gradually shifted? And
yes.
When it shifted to what? What would be the words you would describe it when the anger subsided?
I reached back to God for support and guidance. I switched from being angry to asking him for his wisdom to handle this. I also reached out, and we started praying the rosary again, and that was at our daughter's request. She said it made her feel better. So my husband and my daughter and myself prayed the rosary every night, and I started begging Mary to intercede for us. And I came to the point where I felt like I could turn to our Blessed Mother because she knew the pain of watching a child suffer. And then I finally understood her journey, and that was part of my journey as well.
Mm-hmm. Mental issues, mental health issues, mental illness, it not only affects the suffering person, but the entire family. We've gotten your perspective as a mom. What about your husband and your son and her friends? What went on there? Obviously, they have to be affected as well.
It affected all of us. It was very difficult for my husband, I believe, because fathers feel like they're supposed to protect their family. You know, I'm not a dad, but I mean, this is what I gather. Their job is to protect their family, and all of a sudden he wasn't able to do that anymore. But because my husband and I had been through some stressful times already in our marriage where we had to pull together to survive as a family unit, we leaned into each other and together and sort of tag-teamed. I would do this and he would do that, and he would support me and I would support him. So it made us stronger as a couple. It was very difficult for her brothers. She has three brothers. One lives close. The other two were further away and kind of were on the fringes. And they didn't get the whole story because we did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do anything about it where they were at. So they never really knew the extent of what was going on until they read my book.
Mm-hmm.
But it was difficult for them to watch that with their sister. She turned against our oldest son who lives near us. She turned against their family and started verbally threatening them. That was very difficult.
Wow.
And her paranoia had spread to them. That took a lot of love and understanding on their part, but they had to pull away from the family until that was resolved.
Until it could be resolved. Virginia, all of this, and you wrote a book. What made you decide to take this and journal it and put it out there? Your writing, by the way, is wonderful, but what made you move in that direction?
I felt a calling to be truthful. I know they say you're not supposed to tell that people that you felt like God called you to do it, but I honestly did, and it was through people again. I felt his presence so often through that journey, through the people that came into our life. I could feel his presence and his support. We as a family went all to the Bethesda, Maryland, to the National Institute of Mental Health to take part in the study on schizophrenia within families. And so our entire family unit took part in that study. And while we were there, the nurse who was taking our history looked across the desk at me and said, "You need to write a book." And I looked back and said, "I'm not a writer." She said, "No, I mean it. You need to write your story so people can hear and have some hope through these devastating things." So she said that to me twice in the 2 days that we were there. So I kind of listened, and then another person said it within a week. Another stranger looked at me after I'd shared snippets with her. She said, "People need to read this story. They need to know that a family can go through all of this stuff and come out okay." So then I started exploring writing. And here I am.
And not only have you written a beautiful book, but I know you've written a number of great essays, and I know you write for CatholicMom.com, and you have your own blog at Virginia Pillars, PILLARS.com. And I am certain in reading your book that that you're going to be helping many, many families. I'm sure you probably have heard from some already.
Yes, I have. I have, and actually spoken to some families on the phone. I look at it that our family was given a gift. We were given our daughter back. We begged for that, and we were given her back, because today she is out working a full-time job and a part-time job, working with other people. The part-time job that she just started is helping other people get into recovery with their mental health issues. So it's a giving back. If part of our story can help one family, it brings meaning to what happened to us.
Mm-hmm. The subtitle of my new book is Turning Misery into Ministry, and she's done that. And Virginia, you and your husband have certainly done that as well. I know you do some talks and you speak to people as well.
Yes, I actually I took a class at the very, very beginning of our journey together. She came down with schizophrenia in late 2004. And by 2005, in January, we were taking classes through the National Alliance on Mental Illness Organization. So as a result of the education that I received from them, I now teach the classes for them that I took myself in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I lead support groups for them, and I work with both the ones who are affected by mental illness and their families in a joint support group setting.
Without your faith, and without your husband's faith, could you have gotten to where you are today?
I'm certain not. I'm certain not. I just think we were given many graces. And when I wrote the book, I was able to look back and really identify those with a clear head. Because at the time it was all happening, you can't think in those terms. I couldn't. But when I look back, I can see the graces that we received to get us to where we are today.
And those graces become apparent only after you've kind of gotten through. You know, we've talked about God being faithful, and He won't tax us beyond our abilities, and we'll find a way out and get us through. And I think at that point, for many people who have gone through things, you know, have been there and done that, they are the best advocates. They're the best people to help others, because they share something in common. You know, the family of an autistic child are generally the people raising money for autism, and the guy giving a homeless guy a pair of boots on the bridge was homeless once himself. And it's just so beautiful for me to think that people can go through these types of experiences as your family has, and come out of it not only stronger as a family, but with a book that is going to help many, many people down the road. Virginia, this has been an absolute pleasure. It's great hearing your voice again. We first met in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at the Catholic Writers Guild, and her book has the Catholic Writers Guild seal of approval. The book is entitled Broken Brain, Fortified Faith, Lessons of Hope Through a Child's Mental Illness, and it was published back in September of 2016. It's available online just about everywhere, and our sponsor, CatholicBook.net, has it available right now. So, Virginia, thank you so much for being with us. God bless you.
Thank you, Tony, and God bless you. Thanks for asking me to come and share our story with you. I appreciated your time and your question.
We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
That's the show. We'll see you next time on The Storytellers.
We hope you've enjoyed today's edition of The Storytellers with Tony Agnese, a production of the Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio. To learn more about today's storyteller, go to thestorytellersradio.com. There you can subscribe to the podcast and hear all of our past shows. And join us again next week at this same time for The Storytellers with Tony Agnese.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com.